judging of you here today is the actual verse of Enoch struggle when you do that. So this is actually a very hard
all right.
Can I get someone to pass out some of these? Conference coming up. Looks like I'm going to make one. And the website is up. All right. Now, this is funny because we've never done this before. Thank you.
Water park passes are included in this conference. And time is scheduled. That's got to be scheduled. Time is scheduled. Go to the water park. Not just the back to pass. So, also, what's your name about the schedule? So, website is up. Let's go online. Oh, man. How is it? You would have the cost of housing. You get the big suite out on the website. Okay, but there's going to be. The basic website is up, but there's going to be more added to the website. There's going to be more Instagram. There's going to be a whole page of the website on Instagram. We're working on seminars, lots of seminars. So really, come together. It's all about our us doing it. Alright, let's set it up. Okay, so sign up. Alright? And the only other also, I want to say one more
well, I I do appreciate Mike's enthusiasm. I don't know. I feel like it's a tough transition to go right from Mike being so excited about these things to talking about being poor in spirit. It doesn't quite fit. So I thought we are wrapping up and finishing our series on the Beatitudes. And I thought since we've been talking about this for several weeks, we could kind of cover some of these and see if you remember the promise, since we've been doing one a week. We can remember the promise associated with each situation, with each struggle in life. And some of these are real struggles depending on where you are and what's happened in your life. And I thought we could run through these real quick before we get started. And we're going to look at verse 12 today, where Christ gives a template for how to do these things. So this is the part, and there's several audience participation parts today. It's a little unusual. So, blessed are the poor in spirit, because they will, theirs is what? The kingdom of heaven. So the promise is, if you're poor in spirit, if you get to a point in your life, and you will have those where you are really struggling and you feel discouraged and down and it's hard dealing, that yours is the kingdom of heaven, belongs to those who are poor in spirit. That's a promise from Jesus Christ. Let's look at the next one. Those who mourn, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. So there's a comfort that comes from God for those who mourn. And we all have times of mourning. Robin, just one of her relatives who just passed away. It's hard to believe he was actually her uncle, who I can remember the first time I had met him. We weren't engaged yet. We were just kind of dating, but we weren't allowed to call it dating because of all the church rules we had. These are secret rules. But I remember meeting him, and I think of him that way as the younger guy. He had a big dinner at his house, and it's hard to believe he's not here anymore. But those who mourn will be comforted. The meek, those who are meek, will inherit the earth. Now, this is not what the world says, right? The people who have the earth, who have good things, take it. They're take charge people. But Jesus Christ says those who are meek, those who are humble, will inherit the earth. It's countercultural. What God promises is very different. Those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, blessed are those, for they will be, they'll be filled. That those who long for justice and righteousness, which can be hard to find in certain places in your life and in the world today, they'll be filled one day. They will long for that no longer. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Those who turn the other cheek, those who offer grace, they will be shown mercy as well. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. You know, to be pure in heart takes a great effort in your life to move forward and to squeeze out the parts of your life that aren't glorifying to God. Takes an effort. How can I do this? Can I be accountable? It takes an effort and focus on that. Those who are pure in heart will have a connection and they will see God. They will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Those who struggle and those who are persecuted, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Okay, so you guys did pretty well there. So these are the promises for these situations from God. And so we're going to look at Matthew 5:12 now, which deals with the last situation when others revile and persecute you. Jesus Christ says you should do something. When you're suffering in your life, you should do something. You should rejoice and be glad. Now, I look at this situation and I realize that I don't naturally do this. It doesn't come naturally to me. And I don't know if you know how we have divided up responsibilities here in the church, but we have divided up different responsibilities. Different pastors manage different things. And Greg manages our Sunday service and the teaching schedule. And I don't know if you know how Greg does this, but he sits at home late at night and he thinks, if I have this guy teach on this, maybe he'll learn it. That's what he does. And he applied this to my life, as he often does, and thought, this would be good for Dean to learn this principle because it's not his strength. Maybe Greg does that, maybe he doesn't. I don't know. He does. But I'm just saying, this is not my first impulse. This terrible, bad, hard situation happened. We have a conference call, Greg and Mike and I, even this week we had one. And I remember saying, this is the weirdest thing. I don't know why this is happening. And I told my co-pastors that. And it's a strange, rejoice and be glad. Rejoice. Not my first instinct. So here's what Christ said. Rejoice and be glad. Here's what he says next. For your reward in heaven is great. Your reward in heaven is great. And the last part of this verse, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. If you're going to live a spiritual life, this is normal. This happens. This is normal following God, following Jesus Christ. This is normal. It happened to the prophets of old. If you're going to follow me, this is going to happen to you. So, why don't we pray? We're going to dive into this verse in a little more detail and look at a few examples. So, Lord, thank you that I confess, this is not natural to me to rejoice and be glad when hard things happen. And thank you that we can do that we can look ahead, we can look at what you said. And I pray that you bless us here today. Give us understanding. Help me to focus on your promises and what you say. So I thought we would start by just looking at the word rejoice. Sometimes in the Greek and in the Hebrew, rejoice is a word that is used quite a bit in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And sometimes you find out in looking at some of the Greek and Hebrew meanings that Hebrew is in the Old Testament, the New Testament is Greek. If you use a common concordance, is the Strong's Concordance, and this is the reference number if you want to look it up for yourself. It references a lot of Greek words, and this is 5463. And there is no deep, hidden meaning to this. Rejoice means to take joy in, to enjoy and to delight in something. And I'm going to give you a few specific examples of this particular meaning from the Strong's Concordance. And here's one that I like that relate to this translation of rejoice. To be favorably disposed and leaning towards something. If you're going to rejoice, you're going to lean towards this promise, this idea. You're going to lean into it. You're going to apply yourself to it. Another definition is to experience God's grace or favor. To rejoice is to experience God's grace and favor. You know, we can know about something, but not experience it. And usually when I think of these examples, now that it's cold out, if I have to go to Oberweis ice cream, which is one of my favorite ice creams, and I have an ice cream philosophy of when it's cold, you get this certain ice cream, which is the best ice cream in my humble opinion there, which is the chocolate peanut butter, which I like. And so I can know that it's there. I know that if I drive up Route 59 on the right-hand side, there's an Oberweis store. I know that. But to experience it, we have to go. Anyone who wants to go, please meet me at 12:15 after the service. We'll go experience it together. To experience it, you have to participate in a process. To experience and rejoice, you need to do that. And if you like a different ice cream, that's fine. Another, to be conscious and be glad for his grace. So if you're going to rejoice, you're going to take some effort to do that. So there are times when there's a transitional period. Even Jesus talks about this, where in his life he had just told the disciples in John 16 that he was leaving. He was leaving. Now, if you think about this, he called these people to follow him, and it changed their lives, his disciples. He said, "Follow me," and they had left their old profession, and they were with Jesus Christ all the time, or most of the time. And some of the events we have recorded, but there's a lot of things that he said and did that aren't recorded. And whatever he said would have been good. Whatever he did would have been helpful, the most helpful. And they had a new purpose in life, and they were fulfilled, and they were learning about the kingdom of God like never before, and they were following him. And he tells them, "I'm leaving. I'm going away." Now, if you're them, you'd be going, "Well, what do you mean? What are we going to do? Who are we going to follow? What are we going to do? What do you mean you're leaving?" And he tells them this. "So now you have sorrow, but I will see you again, and then your hearts will rejoice." This is the same rejoice in the Greek. Your hearts will be glad. You will take delight when I see you again in the future. And no one will take this joy away from you. So this principle about God's promise and what is a part of living the Christian life. And he points to this process that they're going to go through. "When I go and die on the cross, I'll be gone, but I am coming back. And then you will have great joy." So there's this process of focusing on that. And this is true in Matthew 5:12. So rejoice and be glad. He tells people to focus on this. "For your reward in heaven is great." This is an interesting piece of advice. He didn't say, "Take your situation and focus on this. Take your hardship and focus on how hard it is and think about it all the time. And go on Facebook and say, 'My life is terrible, awful. It's a no good, terrible, awful, very bad day.'" Right? Talk to your friends and obsess about how bad your situation is. Call your mother. If you call your father, he'll say, "Grow up." Your mother will say, "I'm so sorry. That's terrible. I am with you. I am with you. I'm so sorry." When mothers do this, sometimes fathers do too. I was let go of from my job when I was working for the construction company, and I had never been let go of any job in my life. And it was a pretty traumatic thing. Actually, when they told me this, I remember the company president, because I was not an executive, but I was part owner of the company, and the president came to tell me this, and they didn't tell me it ahead of time. At my level, they just said, "You're done today. Turn in your computer and your phone, and we don't really want you here anymore." And I remember I was standing up, and I got lightheaded right there. It was just like I got unsteady, and there was a chair, and I sat down. But I called my father later in the day. I said, "Dad, this happened. I got let go." You know what my father said? He said, "It'll be all right." "It'll be all right. I've been let go too. It happened to me. It happens sometimes. Just start looking for a job." "It'll be all right." So, focus on God's promise. And he didn't say become hype, and it's pretty easy to become hyper-focused on that situation. Do you know what that person said? Do you know what they did to me? Do you know how it felt when they did that? Now, sometimes we need to process all those things, but Jesus Christ is saying focus on the reward in heaven. That's where your focus should be. I don't think you can live a Christian life if you don't learn how to do this. So I want to give a practical example, because I like practical examples. So this morning, you all got up. Mike, had you get up and find out a person's birthday? So I want to know, what birthday did you find out is closest but hasn't happened yet? Is there a birthday in October or November that's pretty close? What's the closest one we've got? What do you think? 21. Oh, 67. 15. That's Tuesday, right? Is that Tuesday? That's the same as my sister. That's the same. Is that your birthday, Jonathan? So, is anyone closer than that? All right. So Jonathan, now we didn't talk about this before the service, right? I didn't plan this at all. So I didn't know about this. I didn't know when your birthday was. So I thought, if it's okay, that we could sing happy birthday to Jonathan. You guys okay with that? Okay, so we're going to do this today. We're going to rejoice and celebrate Jonathan's birthday a little ahead of time, okay? So, but I would like someone from the music team to help start this, okay? Is that all right? Could I have... What? Well, let's have this section stand up and lead us in this. Happy birthday to Jonathan, okay? Is that all right? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jonathan. Happy birthday to you. Wow, very, you guys sound good. I'm sorry. What's your first name again? Phil. Sorry, Phil. I forgot. So we're going to sing happy birthday to Phil, too, all right? So, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Phil. Happy birthday to you. All right. Thank you. Thank you. I apologize. We can't do everyone's birthday because we're run out of time. Yeah. July. So, while we're singing, what were you guys thinking about your awful, terrible, no good, very bad thing that happened yesterday? No, you weren't. We were thinking about Jonathan and Phil's birthday. Let me ask you two guys. How do you guys feel? You feel okay that we did this for you? Is it okay? Okay. So if we do that again on Tuesday, would you be okay if that happens again? This is a hypothetical situation, yeah. So you'd be okay if that happened again, right? We're focusing on something good. Something good in the future. This is what Christ said. Even though these traumas and hardships in life happen, we need to focus on the future. Now, Paul, the Apostle Paul, actually goes a step farther than this in his description. He says that these hardships in life are important for your life. They're important because they train you to endure the hardship and this pattern of looking to what he has promised in the future is so important to living the Christian life. Paul says this is like endurance training. You know, this is cross-country season, and the cross-country runners, they do training. They run for hundreds of miles in a season so they can run very fast for 15 or 20 minutes. That's what they do. So they're good at this race. And we're in a different type of race. Paul says, not only that, but we rejoice, we take joy in our sufferings. Now, Greg knew that I don't do this. I naturally don't do this. Oh, good, this happened to me again. This happened to me again. Why did this happen to me again? It is not a natural thing. It's not, and I struggle with that. My first response is, I hate this. That guy did this again. And Greg nods his head and goes, yeah, I know. Maybe we'll have you teach on this and see how you do next time. Knowing that suffering produces endurance, because it's a pattern of learning that God has promised, I will wipe away every tear. I will help you with every hardship. So I was thinking about people in history. Sometimes people, God has put some certain people in life and history where you can see how he used certain situations, which are hard to anticipate in the future. And I picked a fairly famous person here, so maybe not an obscure one. A lot of you, so most of you know who this is, right? This is Winston Churchill. He was actually born in the 1800s, and he lived almost 90 years, actually. Lived until 1965, if I remember right. So, interestingly, something was happening in Europe. World War II was happening, and the Germans in World War II had developed a really good mechanized army with the tanks and vehicles, which was the first time this had happened in a war. They were using horses, but engines had gotten better, and they had made vehicles. And the Germans had developed a concept they called Blitzkrieg, where they could move very quickly through a country and just overrun all the and go around things. And that's what they did in France. They went around the Maginot Line and just conquered the whole country. And so the Germans were conquering Europe very quickly. And Winston Churchill thought, well, France has a strong army, and surely France will slow the Germans down and give us some time to prepare for this. And the British sent their force over to France to help the French fight, and the Germans conquered France in 6 weeks. In 6 weeks, they rode all the way, and they had to evacuate the expeditionary force out of Dunkirk. And it was scary. If you're England, you're thinking, well, we're a mighty nation. And all of a sudden, no one can stop the Germans. And all that separates you is this little channel of water. Little channel of water. And Winston Churchill said to the country, now the British wanted to stay a free nation. They didn't want to be a conquered nation and be part of the Nazi regime. They didn't want to be part of that, but they didn't know if they could stop them. They had, and Winston Churchill, this unusual, obscure person, helped them find the will to fight. This is one of the things he said, which is not the most inspiring speech. Listen to this. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. In the air, we shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. What he's saying is, we shall defend our island home at any cost. If we die doing it, we die doing it. And that's what the English people really wanted, and they decided to do this. And then some strange things happen. Some obscure things happen. The Germans were very strategic. Actually, they had a phenomenal air force. They had four times the airplanes the British did. And all the other nations were conquered. And a German air patrol was bombing military targets, which is what you do. You wipe out your enemy's ability to fight. But a German air patrol, bomber patrol, got lost. And they mistakenly bombed the center or part of London. And Winston Churchill was so upset because this was a civilian target. He's bombing civilians. He's bombing civilians. And he got so upset in a reactionary mode, he says, send 40 bombers to Berlin and bomb Berlin. And they did that. And you know what happened? Adolf Hitler got so upset that he decided to blitz. They called it the Blitz. 57 days of bombing of London. And what this did is it took the Germans away from bombing military targets in Britain and to bombing the city of London and bombing cities. They were firebombing the cities, trying to set it on fire, and it allowed the British to rebuild their air bases because now they were bombing civilian targets. So Winston Churchill was going from place to place during the bombing, and this is what they were saying. And he would encourage people during the bombings. This was their saying. London can take it. Our city home, London can take it. We will get through this. London can take it. Now, that's an amazing thing to say. Bombs are falling down. People are dying. Buildings are crumbling. But they're saying, we will survive this. We will endure together. And he focused on the future in an unusual way. So, away from Winston Churchill a little bit. Back to this verse. Rejoice and be glad. Rejoice and be glad. How do you do that? For your reward in heaven is great. So if you're going to do this, if I'm going to do this, we need to take some time and focus on the reward and think about what is the reward that God offers me for the things that are hard, for my circumstance, which is going to be different from other people. It's going to be different from other times. It's going to be unique to your life. But the promises of Christ are the same. And then the part we really haven't talked about much is the last part of this verse, that for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So Jesus Christ is saying, if you're going to stand for him, this is kind of normal. This happens in spiritual work. There's an attack on your life and how this goes. This is normal. As a matter of fact, Peter said the same thing in 1 Peter 4. It says, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you. Who likes tests? I love to take a test. As though something strange were happening to you. Why is this happening? But rejoice in so far that you share in Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. His glory will be revealed later. So we need to know these promises. What does God promise? He promises to comfort. He promises that we'll be shown mercy in the future. Now, you may think, you know, I'm not a super spiritual person. I'm not like Winston Churchill. I'm not even like Paul or Peter. I'm kind of a normal person with average, everyday struggles. At least that's kind of how I think about myself a lot of times. I'm not a super person. Well, I want to tell you a little bit about Winston Churchill and his start in life. When he was in school, I want to read you what some of his teachers said. One of his teachers in specific. Here he goes, Winston Churchill. He has no ambition. If he were to exert himself, he might be the first time at the end of his term. Very truthful, which means he's very honest, but he's a regular pickle in many ways at present, which means he creates these situations. It is a constant trouble to everyone in his class. He's always in some sort of scrape or another. He cannot be trusted to behave himself anywhere. Winston Churchill. So in his youth, he was not well liked. He will not amount to much. He has no ambition whatsoever. He just likes to get into trouble. You know, he struggled greatly with depression, Winston Churchill. He actually named his depression. It would come and go. His wife talked about it. His children talked about it. He called them his black dog days. And that's what he called them. He gets into that melancholy mood. He called it his black dog. In 1911, counseling was, but he got with a doctor who helped him. And this is what he said about the doctor. This is in 1911, so psychiatry and counseling wasn't a big thing, but this man helped him. He says, I think this man, the counselor, might be useful to me if my black dog returns. So the dog could go out or come back. He seems quite away from me now. That's his depression. It's such a relief. All the colors come back to me into the picture. When I'm depressed, I don't see any color. It's just dark and black. When I feel better, when my black dog leaves, I can see color again. So, and this is, people argue about this. We can't say this for sure, but this is one of his quotes. Think about if Winston Churchill learned from his depression how to keep things away. If God maybe used that to help England later, used a very hard thing. Listen to this quote. Think of it if you struggle with depression. This is what he said. He said this to the country, but think about this in terms of depression. Never give in. Never, 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 never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force, never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy. That applies to the country. Maybe that applies to life, too. So, what can you do? What can you do? What can we do? So I came up with a little acronym to try to relate this. L, look to the finished work. If you're going to focus on God's promise, it says we have been brought near to God. We are close to Him by the finished work of Jesus Christ. And we're actually going to do that today. Do that in your own life. We're going to do that as a group today as we break bread together in just a few minutes. You can do that in your personal life. When you don't feel like things are okay, you have been made okay by the finished work of Jesus Christ. L-I, investigate the truth of your future. The acronym is LIFT. We're going to lift ourselves out of our current circumstance, which means you need to look at God's promises for your life. What do they say? You need to learn them enough. This applies. God's promise applies in my situation. You need to focus on the hope you can have. If you're going to rejoice and be glad, you need to experience this. It can't be intellectual knowledge. I think one of the struggles with Christianity in America is we like new knowledge, but it really needs to be applied to have an effect in our lives. You know, in America, it was a shock. It was a shock when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. No one was expecting it. It was a shock to the nation, and the America had an isolationist policy. We remember World War I. We don't want another war. It's a European problem. We don't want to be involved in that. Now, Winston Churchill was trying to keep his country together, and he had been begging the United States to come in and to assist him. And FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, says, I just can't. There's just too much opposition in my country. I can't just declare war on my own. I can't do it. When the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, what do you think? Now, Winston Churchill was hoping for help, dramatic help from the United States to fight Germany, to save his country. When the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, what do you think he felt? What do you think? He was excited. He was actually having dinner with an American ambassador in Britain, and he got a telegram that this had happened, and he stood up, and his first impulse, we're going to declare war on Japan too, which he had no ability to do that, and his aide said, that's just not a good idea right now. Just let this go, calm down, and he called FDR and said, what's happening? Is it true? And this is what he said. He wrote a little note in his memoirs. He's being saturated and satiated with emotion and sensation, I slept the sleep of a saved and thankful person. We were no longer alone. We were no longer facing opposition and this oppression alone. Someone was going to come and save us and help us. This is Christianity. I mean, that's not really Christianity, but in the Christian life, we need to look to God will help us. God will comfort. God will pull. Even though I can't, and there was a lot of hardship and death to come, but he said, we will come out. This is Christian. In the Christian view, we need to focus on what God has said, and we will come out well on the other side. Last but not least, T-L-I-F-T, talk to God. Talking to God is prayer. Pray through these struggles in your life. And even if you probably get to the point I have where I go, wow, you said this, but it sure doesn't feel true right now. I'm having a struggle believing this for me. It's okay to tell God that. I'd like to trust you more here. I've told God that. One time I read a verse in Matthew 11. I said, God, how could you say that? How on earth could you say that? It doesn't seem true here. And God will help you with that. So rejoice and be glad. Look forward to your reward in heaven, and we can help each other do that. There are times we can't see things, and we can, hey, have you? Let's talk about that, and maybe we can pray about these things together. So that's all I had for today. Why don't we have the music team? Actually, were you doing one more song, or are we doing Breaking the Bread? What are we doing next, Greg? Oh, Breaking the Bread's afterwards. Oh, I apologize. That's after. So, I thought we were doing, well, how about if I pray and we'll have the music team come up and we'll worship together. God, thank you that we can look to you and your promises. Thank you that you have said that our reward in heaven is great. God, that is hard to see sometimes. We don't see this. Help us to understand and trust you that that is what's really happening for us. In your son's name.